Hey guys, welcome back to Esthetician on the Edge, the podcast. In this week's episode, I thought we'd go over an ingredient. I know, time for some boring theory. Talk a little bit about bullies in our industry and sampling to clients, when to sample and when not to sample products to clients. I don't know the answer either, so we'll just figure it out as we go. Let's go ahead and get into our first segment. I got a DM from a soon-to-be graduated esthetician student. Well, by the time I record this, it'll be a few weeks ago. And she stated in the message that she had an embarrassing story about a practical interview she had just finished. Now, y'all know me. I love a good story. And if it's embarrassing and funny at the same time, win-win, that is one of my favorites. So I settled in and I got comfy and I was prepared to have a nice, lighthearted, fun story to share with you guys on this episode. But as I read through the message, the only emotion I felt was absolute anger. Anger at the way the student was treated on what should have been her introduction into this world, the world of aesthetics, the world that she had just paid probably $10,000 to $12,000 to be a part of. The student said that her initial interview, everything was going really, really well. The only exception being that the master esthetician of the spa told her that the school that she was currently attending was a shitty school. I don't know if the student wanted me to reveal the school. She told me the name of the school that she went to, but it's usually a good program. And they typically teach a lot of extra massage techniques that you don't get in other schools. Several different facial protocols. I know that they have body protocols. A lot of them now offer lash training and dermaplaning at some of the campuses. Of course, I say that, but everything does depend on the teacher and the program. But I kind of got to think, if this student aced a sit-down interview and could answer pertinent questions about facials and treatments, that she was probably taught well enough. So a practical interview ended up being scheduled for a week out. We all know practical interviews are not fun. They are not. You're nervous. If you're new to the field, you probably haven't used the product line that the spa carries. You have no idea where anything in the room is located. You basically feel out of sorts and discombobulated through the entire process, yet you're trying to show off. Completely not fair. Now, I told you guys, during my first practical interview, I broke a damn steamer arm, for fuck's sake. So trust me, it can go south and sideways pretty quickly. And as someone who's given practical interviews before, I can tell you everyone screws up. Everyone, even the most seasoned esthetician, they will make a mistake, even if it is a small mistake, because they're nervous. You can't help it. The student said she went back in for the practical interview and that it was apparent even from the beginning it was not going to go well for her. That the first thing she did was she kind of got the headband caught in the master esthetician's hair. Now to me, that's not a big deal. It happens. Hello, hold still and let me get it out of your damn hair. Come on, most people's hair, it doesn't survive the facial process anyway. So what's the big deal? Let me pull the thing out of your hair. Then the student said while she was cleansing, she was told by the master esthetician that she had absolutely no technique. Now, knowing the school that the student attended, I don't know if I believe that because they have a very, very specific cleansing technique. So this couldn't have been true unless the student just threw water at her and then squirted some cleanser and kind of patted it in, which she didn't. When they got to the point of the facial where the student performed a hand and arm massage, the master esthetician kept telling her, more pressure, more pressure. The student said she couldn't get the pressure to the point that the master esthetician approved. And at the end of the practical, the student said she was literally shaking with nerves and then asked the master esthetician what she could improve on and learn from their time together. To which the reply was, you're in school, you should already know this. Even with all of that, the student sent a thank you for your time type of email. And of course, she never heard a reply back from the spa. I can tell you, this student she didn't send me this message to bitch about the interview or how unfair the interview was. She only saw that it was a tragedy and something she didn't want to go through again. And she was basically asking me what could be done to improve the situation so that she wouldn't flub up again like that anymore. My first suggestion was smothering the master esthetician with the damn headband that she complained about. But this is some of the bullying that happens in our industry. This is a perfect example. Perfect example. And this girl, there was absolutely nothing she could have done to make this experience better for herself. Absolutely nothing. This master esthetician, she has the power to hire, or at least to suggest hiring or not hiring employees that will work under her. And instead of just doing her job to the best of her ability, she has to bring an attitude into it and use it to make others question their own worth. As someone who has given many practical interviews in the past, rule number one, you never speak. Never during a practical facial interview. Now, you can answer questions put to you by the person that's interviewing, or I don't know, if the steam is going straight up your nose and your moment's from suffocating, okay, ask them to adjust it. That's fine. But the point of a practical interview, the whole point, is to gauge the person's basic skills. You want to see if they have what it takes to be hired on where you're at. And you can't really assess them if you're constantly making demands and suggestions or giving a damn commentary throughout. You have tainted that interview from that point on. You'll never know how that person would have truly performed. During practical interviews, I've had cleanser shoved up my nose, extractions that were done way too long, masks that were put on in the wrong order, my arm almost pulled out of socket during a hand and arm massage, a brush rolled into my hair so tight I had to pick it out myself during a scalp massage, lots of bad things. But I didn't interfere. I didn't stop them. Well, except the brush thing. She started crying, poor thing. And I had to run interference on that one. One of the good things about a practical interview, at least from the person who's running the interview's perspective, is it will tell you how this person handles doing the wrong thing. Another thing it tells you is if they are teachable. Can you get past this and teach them? If I can quickly improve their skills, I can hire them and then we can just get going. I want them to do their thing without any guidance from me. And usually by the time that analysis is over, they've hit their stride. The nerves have calmed down a bit and I can see how they will perform in a room by themselves. And if an applicant asks you what they can do to improve, hello, it's your job to give constructive criticism, not to be a douche and say, you should know. Really? Really? Because I didn't know jack shit coming out of school, and I'm pretty sure that that's the same for most of the estheticians out there. Personally, I valued everything and anything a more seasoned esthetician told me that I could do to be better. This asshole of a hiring manager could have made a huge difference in this student's life simply by saying, hey, this is what you did incorrectly, and here are things you can do to make it better. I'm an asshole at the best of times, but even I'm not as big of an asshole as this woman was. She was just a straight-up power-hungry bully. But job interviews, they aren't the only place that I hear and see abuse going on. Message boards, I've talked about message boards before, but oh my God. They are so damn toxic. They bullies everywhere. Bullies who comment nasty stuff just to see how many thumbs up and laughing emojis that they can get from other dickheads that are on the board. My favorite, though, is when some brave soul, some sweet human being tries to call the bully on their bullying. And the bully answers back with, well, if you can't handle constructive criticism, get off the internet. Let me give you some examples that I pulled off of some boards of what a bully considers constructive criticism. Okay, you ready? Did you even go to training class? These are the worst. Let's see. If I was this client, I'd threaten to beat your ass too. You should just stop doing brows. You suck. You asked for it, so I'm just going to say they are ugly and they are uneven. Did the client ask to look like a drag queen? Just curious. You need to find a new career, sis. Now, I don't know about you, but this shit ain't constructive. It's just criticism. It's just people being bitches. Or when someone posts the same question that has been asked a million times, always, there's that one message board policeman. This question gets asked daily. Use the search and read the rules before you post. Okay. You know what? I get it. Seeing that same question every single day, it is annoying. It really is. It annoys me. But in those rules that you're talking about, there's nothing that says your hateful ass has to comment. Scroll, sis. Scroll. Let an admin, the person that created the group and is responsible for this sort of thing, take care of the post. That's what they're supposed to be doing, not you. So calm down. I find people feel extremely empowered behind a keyboard. You know, the anonymity of it. They feel way too empowered. So much so, they've forgotten what an ass beating feels like. I think that's the problem. On boards, I used to answer questions or comment, but I stopped because of all the nastiness. What's the point? Any legitimate question, it's going to get buried under all the snarky commented posts. And that's a real shame because these boards, with all of those years of experience gathered together and all of these different techniques learned through the years, my God, that could be such a great resource for us all. But those keyboard warriors, they gotta fuck it up for everyone. And tell you what I wanna do, I wanna launch a full-on Take Back the Boards campaign and kick all those assholes off. Who's with me? We ride at dawn. I mean, honestly though, screw that. I'm not going anywhere at dawn. How about we ride at like 9:30? Yeah. But seriously, if you see someone being douchey, don't let them be douchey. Call them on it. There are more people who want to call them on it, but they don't have the cojones to actually do it. So be the one, step up, and call someone when they're being douchey. But that's your assignment from Esthetician on the Edge. Okay, on to the next segment. Let's talk a little bit about peptides. Now, this is not going to be a super long theory class, I promise. It's actually going to be really quick, a lot quicker than any of the rest, simply because peptides they're simple to explain. It's the best way to put it. Peptides, like all the buzzworthy skin ingredients that we know about, they haven't changed. Nothing's changed in like 50 or 60 years. So it's the same technology, just rebranded. Peptides, they have a very specific function. It's very simple, to stimulate collagen and elastin production. And they also are water binders. Peptides are, and you've heard, I know you heard this in your theory class, but they are strings of amino acids. And as you know, amino acids are what? They are the building blocks of proteins. Now, what is collagen? What? Collagen is protein. You see the connection there? Peptides, amino acids, building blocks, collagen. You need peptides in your life for collagen. There is some controversy surrounding peptides. You know, the same as a lot of other popular ingredients. But before that, I'm going to give you a quick lesson on dermal penetration. In the scientific community, it is a well-accepted fact that for something to penetrate into the skin, it has to fall below 500 Daltons. Now, don't go crazy. Daltons is just, that's just a unit of measure. So think of it like kilograms, miles, meters, just a unit of measure. So for something to penetrate, it has to fall below 500 Daltons. So some examples of that would be allergens. Most allergens have a really small molecular size. And transdermal drug delivery systems also are always under 500 Daltons. But guess what? Peptides are not under 500 Daltons. They are actually quite a bit above 500 Daltons. So in theory, a peptide should not be able to penetrate the skin, therefore should not be able to cause change in the skin at all. Stop, period. But with peptides, there have been several scientific double-blind studies done in legitimate labs, not funded by skincare companies, that show peptides do indeed work on the skin, regardless of their Dalton size. And science, well, they can't really explain it. Are you with me so far? Let's review. Peptides help make collagen, but they do it by defying the laws of science as we currently know them. That does not mean that science does not have a theory. Okay, back on track. Let's talk science. They think that peptides work by signaling from atop the skin. Basically, they send chemical signals that mimic messages that cells send to one another to create change. In theory, peptides are sending signals to cells that are located deep in your dermis to create and to flourish, all while the peptide is just hanging out on your epidermis, living its best life. Now, how damn cool is that? It's like they're magic. Now, I know some websites talk about them being penetration enhancers, but the research sites that I looked at stated that those particular peptides aren't really used in the skincare world anyway, so there's that. Okay, let's review again. Are you still with me? Peptides, they help make collagen by speaking the love language of the cells to the cells on the down low. All right. Back to theory. One very popular peptide is called acetylhexapeptide 8, and it works on the same muscle nerve connections as, are you ready? Botox. Because, well, it's a shortened peptide sequence of Botox. Now, acetylhexapeptide causes wrinkles to soften and relax. Remember, peptides are also really, really good humectants, and they can bind water to the skin just like a hyaluronic acid. So again, hydrated skin is going to look and feel plumper, hence the less wrinkly appearance. Another popular peptide that you'll probably see on labels is Matrixol 3000, and the company that trademarked and manufactures this one, they did a double-blind study, and women that were using it noticed a 45% reduction in deep wrinkles, not fine lines, deep wrinkles. That's crazy. It sounds like a dream come true to me. How about y'all? Well, let's talk about a few rules of peptide use. They aren't usually very sensitizing to clients. Allergies are very rare with peptides. So you can recommend it to almost all of your clients without any kind of issues. And you want to make sure that you're selling a peptide to your client in the form of a moisturizer, of a serum, or maybe an eye cream. If you have a cleanser that has peptides in it, it won't do a damn bit of good. Remember, the peptide has to stay on the skin to speak the love language of the cells. Cleansers, you're going to put it on and wash it right off. So there's no love language going on. It didn't have time for it. Also, one of the things I see a lot of people doing is they oversell a peptide. Well, they oversell all ingredients, but I see it a lot with peptides. It is not a miracle. It's not Botox in cream form, which I have also seen a lot about acetylhexapeptide. Yes, that particular one is a substrate of Botox, but it is so far away from doing what Botox does. I'm not above trotting out the fact that there is a link to Botox when I'm selling something with acetylhexapeptide, but I won't tell a client that it does what Botox does, and I won't tell a client that it freezes the muscles. It won't, and they're going to figure that out, and then they're going to bring that product back thinking that it's not working or that you don't know what you're talking about. As with any product you sell, you always want to demonstrate how to apply the correct amount, how much they should use, and how many times a day they should be using it. Peptides are fabulous. It's an old school ingredient, but trust me, peptides are a great thing. And if a client listens to you and they do all the things that you tell them to do, they follow the rules of peptides, they will notice a definite difference in their skin. They're going to have definitely a lot less fine lines, and their deeper wrinkles are not going to look so deep. So get your clients sold on peptides. And if you don't yourself use a peptide serum, you should really add one to your routine. Okay, in the last segment of the show, I thought we'd talk about sampling. I had someone reach out via email right after I posted that meme about crusty samples and testers and ask what my personal policy is on sampling clients. I don't sample that much, unless the company that I use has recently launched a new product or they've reformulated something, something along those lines. Although I will sample someone who has truly, seriously reactive skin, it's not just in their head, or they have very sensitive skin before I'll let them buy a new product. General rule of thumb, I'll give them about 2 weeks worth of product and then schedule a follow-up time to call and see how everything went. And then I just set the product aside for them to purchase at their next appointment, or I arrange pickup time. Now, I'm not against sampling. I'm not. Not even a little bit. But one of the reasons that I don't sample is budget. Samples, at least the lines I've used, you guys might know a secret that I don't know. Samples are expensive. They are so not cheap anymore. Those little trial size bottles of cleanser from PCA, they're like $4 each. Fuck that. A 10 pack of Image, the hyaluronic filler, it's $30. $30. Glymede samples, the cleansers, they come in little tiny containers. They're like $2 each, and those things are tiny. You might get like one cleanse out of that thing. And most of these little bottles, they barely have enough for 2 days if it's a cleanser or a moisturizer. Even worse, if you end up with those little packets, you know, little foil packets, the tear ones that have like a single application. So to me, there isn't a point in blowing money on samples that aren't going to be big enough for them to really get a feel for the product or how their skin's going to react. I mean, unless you could luck up and find a cool rep who's going to be giving you a lot of samples to hand out. But I don't see that happening a lot anymore, at least in my neck of the woods. A lot of clients, they are mulled enough to ask for samples every single visit. That's annoying, FYI. I think maybe, they think it's something that we get for free, but let me tell you, they are absolutely not free. We pay for those things. Back in the day, way back in the day, you used to get samples with every single order you placed. That rarely happens anymore, and samples, even if you did have to pay for them back then, they were relatively inexpensive to purchase if you did have to buy them. I used to get like 20 sample size serums for $1. I can afford to give you samples all day at that rate, but not anymore. Now you gotta pay to play. But the main reason, the number one reason that I don't give samples outside of budget is because for me, sampling does not work. It doesn't equal a sale. My client base is mainly, they're age 30 to 70 year old women who are in a very comfortable income bracket. They know immediately if they want something, and they buy it. If I think a client will be interested in a product, I always make sure to use that product in their service and make sure that I call attention to it at that time so that they can make a note of the smell and the feel of the product. Let's face it, the products that we're going to tell a client about are going to be something at the beginning of the facial, like a cleanser or toner, or at the very end of the facial when your client is starting to wake up or starting to come back to their senses, your serums, your eye creams. It's not going to be in the middle of a facial. You're not going to be like, and this is the massage cream that I use on you. It's vegan. No one does that. So it's fine to mention those products during the service. I know beyond a shadow of a doubt, if I give them a sample, my people, not y'all's people and not all people, my people, they are going to throw it in their bag and they're never going to think of it again until they clean out their purse to donate or change for the seasons. But I will tell you who I do sample, which you might find surprising. I sample the people I work with in the hair and in the nail department. I found that through sampling them, they are more likely to bring it up in conversation with the clients. This is the only place where sampling has ever led to me consistently having product sales. And I don't even care if the stylist gets the sale. I really don't. All I care about is bringing attention to my department with the client. So now that client is aware that, number one, we sell products. Number two, that we offer spa services. And I typically get an introduction through the stylist when they come back and an opportunity to hand out a business card. Press a little flesh. That's win-win, right? Funny story. I did have a coworker that I caught filling up travel size containers, like the kind that you get at CVS or Walmart or Target to go on an airplane, you know, not over 3 ounces. But I caught her filling it up one day. I came in to work early to get set up because I had such a busy day. And she was just in there pumping away in the dark when I walked in. I don't know who was more surprised, me or her. I did wonder though where all my product was going, because I'm a Grinch when it comes to using products and services. I guess the samples that I was giving her, it wasn't enough for her. I posted a poll last week to get your guys' take on it, and 54% of you said that you do regularly sample clients, but 59% reported less than 50% of clients actually purchasing after sampling. I had a few people DM me, swear to God, swear to God, Y'all crack me up with how passionately defensive you can be about what works for you. I promise you, you don't have to convince me that it works. I believe you. I really do. And I'm not saying it's right or it's wrong to sample. You know what I'm doing? I'm having a discussion that I find interesting and I thought you guys would find interesting. So what I want you to do is you take a deep breath of your $12 sample serum scented with rosemary and lavender and breathe. It's fine. You're fine. No judgment. If your employer, if they're willing to invest in samples and they want you to actively hand them out, do so. What could it hurt? Or if you own your own space and you want to make the purchase, or a rep gives you a bunch for free, or they're just cheap, try it. It won't hurt anything. Everyone's client base, they're so different. And the only way to know either way is to give it a try. Do 1 month. Try 1 month of sampling. And that should give you a good idea if clients will make it worth purchasing more samples. I do know a few places who do this. You guys might already do this, but I think it's super cute. They make these absolutely adorable welcome bags for all of their new clients. And in those bags, they have samples of basic things from every department. So you'll get a cleanser, you'll get a moisturizer. They typically pop in like one expensive serum. And then if there's hair, they pop in something like a conditioner or something, a little sample packet. And then there's business cards, a menu of services, maybe a pen. I've known a few to throw in cute little somethings like a little snack with their logo on it. And some spas offer punch cards for product purchase rewards. I would think that would work so much better than just randomly giving out a small tube for somebody to throw in their bag and forget about. I'm actually trying to put together some of those welcome bags for my place. I think it's fun. It's fun to hand clients new things. You know, they get excited. It'll definitely make an impression. And everyone loves a damn swag bag. Think about how we all lose our minds when we go to shows and those women that are standing at the doors as you walk in, they hand you those little shitty canvas bags. The only thing they have in them are like brochures and tiny samples. And we, oh my God, our dumbasses, we act like we were just handed a damn hydrofacial machine instead of a coupon for like $500 off. That's it. We are suckers, damn it. Absolute suckers. But anyway, let me know how your sampling experiment goes if you give it a try. Very interested to see what kind of luck you have. Okay, it's time for our Pam of the Week, and this particular SD, she wants to remain anonymous. And she says, I'm an aesthetic student in Utah, and it's a crazy time to be going into this business. We take clients on spa days, and boy, do I have a pandemic Pam for you. I like that, pandemic Pam. So she says, we have to take our temperature in the lobby, and this lady walks up to the door and bangs on it. We, of course, yelled, we're open, come on in. And she yells back, well, excuse you, I'm not touching this door. So we kick it open. And after she gets all checked in and her esthetician reviews her file, she comes out to greet her. Well, the esthetician's face mask was not covering her nose completely. And she pulled it up when she was walking up to greet the client. The lady then refused her as her esthetician and called over our spa advisor and said, I will not have her as my esthetician as she has just touched her face covering and it was not fully covering her face. Does that mask even have a metal wire for the nose? Our spa advisor advised that the wire is not required and she will follow all proper protocols to keep sanitary procedures in place before, during, and after the service. But still, the client refused and would not go into the treatment room until they found her a new mask. She says, good on the student. I would have lost it and told her if she didn't feel comfortable, then we can reschedule for her when she does. But the esthetician went ahead and took her back into the room and waxed everything. I feel like the pandemic has made Pams even more Pammy. What do y'all think? Okay, that's all the time I have for today. Big shout out to everyone who's buying stuff from the Amazon store. I'm glad that you're liking it. Keep tagging me in your post if you buy something. I'm loving the post with the old lady glasses. Those are good. Y'all are missing out just because they're old lady glasses. If you're not using them, you're totally missing out. But anyway, thank you all for listening and spreading the good word to your friends and coworkers and for making your partners listen to awful, terrible stories of vaginal waxing. That is still one of my favorite DMs to get. As always, wishing you guys a pan-free week. See you next show.